that or give us some feedback, you can give us a call here in the studio or send us a text message to our studio line at 778-782-2573. We love to hear from our listeners, and we'd love to hear from you. So take that opportunity and drop us a note, and we'd be very happy to hear from you and get back to you on whatever your question is. Next up is Gardening with Embark, and here we go. Time for now, Gardening with Embark. Joining me in the studio is our gardens expert, Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability. Welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
It is July already.
Ooh, time has fly. Yes. The summer solstice has passed.
Yeah.
So officially we are in summertime.
Yep.
And
All the kids are out of school.
The kids are out of school. We're in summer break for the next 10 weeks. So we gardeners are just at the moment seeing how our summer crops are doing. If we remember, it's week 27. And in week 20, the long weekend of May, we were encouraging everyone to start planting your summer garden.
Yeah.
And by now, we have all our tomatoes ready fruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the plants are in flower with small tomatoes showing in there. So summer is here, and the summer crops are producing.
Now, is that a little accelerated? Because we've had a lot of hot weather. I mean, it's cool now, but we had a lot of hot weather.
I think it was quite good for our summer crops.
Yeah.
And also our spring crops or cold crops are still doing well.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, we have cabbages in the garden.
Yeah.
And the cabbages are, if you observe them, the green are turning into a bit silver.
Mm-hmm.
So a silver green, which means that the plant is almost done. So it's time to harvest. So if you have a red cabbage or white cabbage, which you see the leaves turning into a silver shine, it's the plant is telling, I'm done, I'm going to go into flower, it's time to harvest.
Right.
Yeah. So and the kale as well, some kales as well, leaves of the kales are showing that too, which means I think it's because some of them is because of the weather as well, it has changed, hot weather. We planted the spinach, but everything went into flower immediately. It didn't grow much, so it
right.
Was, but at least,
and that was because it was sort of so hot that the plant just I'm ready.
So there are cold crops, so they like to have rainy, cloudy days, cold. But the moment they have direct sunlight, hot temperature above 25 degrees, it is not my environment. I had to reproduce, make seeds, and die. That is the cycle of the plant. So the plant starts from a seed and ends up making seeds. But at the moment, we have all our summer crops ready to keep us busy.
Yeah.
For instance, the tomatoes, I was mentioning, they are in flower, and we need to keep removing the side shoots and keep on watering.
Mm-hmm.
90 to 80% of the plant is water. And so if we want to have juicy tomatoes, they need to be watered.
Right.
So that's our busy time. As well, the zucchinis.
Mm-hmm.
Zucchinis are in flower. And we can see those zucchinis that we had to keep an eye on the zucchinis and harvest at the right size.
Right.
Because you say, oh, next week I will harvest. And when you come back and it's tall, 2 to 3 times the size that you want.
So what do you think is the right size?
Again, you will go like a right size will be 8 inches.
Mm-hmm.
That's what in the supermarkets you will find very young, soft skin. But if you leave it longer, it will be twice. So you will have 2 meals from one zucchini or 3 meals from one zucchini.
Right.
So it depends.
Now,
of
is that just it's sort of growing too big to be easy to work with, or is there an effect on the taste and texture and whatnot?
So the younger the zucchini is, there are no seeds inside.
Okay.
So everything is fleshy.
Yeah.
As the zucchini grows and matures, the seeds inside the zucchini will also mature and become more visible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a large zucchini which is mature, you will have to scoop the seeds
right.
in order to use the flesh. Yeah. So that is the reason you want to use as much as possible. And if you have a and so for cooking, easier to cook and eat raw. But as the zucchini matures, you will have to cook a bit longer and remove more work in cleaning and removing the seeds.
Once you harvest the plant, the zucchini, does the plant continue to try and flower and produce more?
Yes. The zucchini constantly are making female flowers.
Yeah.
Female flowers are the ones that have the zucchini, but as well they need to be pollinated with the pollen from the male flower. So you have to keep an eye that make sure that the flowers are being pollinated, so you can have a nice zucchini with seeds in order you want to save seeds for the next year. At this time is to see there is the die back, so it means that of the zucchini, which means that where the flower attached to the fruit, sometimes it starts to turning yellow and they black, and mm-hmm. suddenly you see your zucchini dying from the flower to the stem. And that is because it's a physiological response, the lack of calcium in the soil.
Right.
So we need to add some lime in the soil to reduce this physiological effect. So and have nice green and beautiful zucchinis. A plant of zucchini can produce up to 25 zucchinis. So that happens when we plant two or three plants of zucchini, and later we are like, zucchinis to share with everyone.
So there really is no value in letting it get big. Because,
no, there's no value.
You know, it's going to be better when it's small, and the next ones are going to come along.
Yes, and these ones are coming along, and it's not only one, it's two or three, plus the one you are harvesting, ready to come and to harvest. So. Yeah. So keep an eye, visiting every week to the garden, and if it's ready to harvest, just harvest and eat the produce. As well, as we harvest the zucchini plants, as well, we have to remove the leaves that are turning yellow, because once the leaves mature, they tend to become a nice ground for wild powdery mildew, which is a disease. So if leaves are turning yellow, just trim them and keep the plant nice and tidy, so the air flows through the plant as well, and the humidity doesn't accumulate. And remember, high humidity, high temperature, nice environment for fungal diseases. So keep nice and the air flowing through the plant.
Yeah.
So that zucchinis, tomatoes, and the beans that we have planted as well, you will see if they are pole beans, they need to be trained to climb the trellises. So we need to put trellises at teepee tree, bamboo canes, and guide the vines to climb and start growing vertically, and they soon will start flowering. I haven't seen flowers yet in our garden, but soon they will start. And the corn, the corn already has flowers. The tusks at the top, which is the male flower, and the silks where the corn itself is, they are showing up. So now we have to keep an eye the pollination happens, so we can have a nice ear of corn with full of kernels. Remember, corn is a grass, a modified grass, and it pollinates by wind. So if there is the wind, will move the pollen from the male flower to the female. And if doesn't happen, is sometimes what we do, just make sure we take the stalks, the male flowers, and we shake the pollen on the female flowers, kind of do it manually.
Right.
Yeah. So, now we see in the garden the corn is in flower. Yeah.
Yeah. How long before we see that turning into cobs? We can harvest
another 1 month more.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing that we have in the garden is potatoes. Okay. The potatoes a week ago they were on flower.
Yeah.
So now we can very much go and harvest for new potatoes.
Nice.
So new potatoes means that the skin of the potato is very thin, so when you just rub it with your thumb, the skin will peel it. So that's why we call new potatoes.
Yeah.
So and usually happens when after the flower, 2 weeks after the flowering, 2 to 3 weeks after flowering, so we can have a new potato. But if you can harvest as you need it and leave the plant in there, the plant will die once the potatoes are fully formed and the skin is thick enough for storing over the fall and winter.
Excellent. And are there other, what else we got coming up?
Lavender. Oh, yes, lavender. Finally, the lavender is in flower The moment we'll be harvesting in the coming weeks to make lavender syrup, to make sugar lavender, and as well now we are trying to see if we can collect some of the flowers to make some sachets, yeah, little pouches with lavender flowers to put in the wardrobes and the to keep our clothes nice and fresh. So yeah, lavender is there. We have a huge lavender bush. Mm-hmm. The other thing that is happening is lemon verbena we have. It was not doing well because it's a plant that doesn't like winter, mm-hmm, but somehow it survived this winter because it was warm enough. And now it's beautiful. So yeah, again, we are harvesting the branches and leaves and making into a syrup. And that syrup can be used as a mix with lemonade or orange juice and have a nice lemon verbena lemonade, which is this kind of flowery taste. Yeah. It's very delicious.
And now that the summer is starting, but we're also thinking about the fall.
Correct. So at the moment, we are thinking about the fall, and we are already started our nursery here in the garden. Yeah. We decided to find a small space, and we started at the nursery for our cold crops for the fall. So mm-hmm, we have already planted broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, and kale, sprouting broccoli as well for the fall. Yeah. So we will see that by the end of September, beginning of October, we will transplanting all those to the final spots. So yeah, so we are already thinking for the fall and for the winter. So if we want a moment, we haven't done that yet, but we will put soon the Walla Walla's onion seeds, mm-hmm, because Walla Walla is one of the onions that like overwintering. But it takes quite a while for the seed to germinate and the plant to grow. So at the moment is the right time because the soil is warm. There is nice weather. Yeah. We just keep watering, keeping the soil moist. So the seed will just germinate happily and continue growing until this time to move to their final place in around October, mid-October. And that will be for overwintering.
Excellent. Well, it's never a dull moment in the garden, is there?
Oh, no, no. The other thing is that, yeah, we like to be in the garden. It's hot in hot days, particularly. You look for a shade, have a cold drink, but at the same time that you're enjoying the good weather, having a cold drink, you are thinking what needs to be done for the fall, what we need to be done for winter. So mm-hmm, it's like slowly planning. If you are growing year-round, yeah. So some of our gardens, they don't grow year-round. So once October arrives, they will plant garlic, mm-hmm, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then put the garden to bed for the winter. But we encourage, because we have all the gardens have hoop houses, so we are encouraging to grow year-round. So that's why we're always thinking what to do in the fall and in winter. But if our listeners are... say my gardening season goes from May to October, that is okay. Yeah. Once October arrives, make sure that you remove all the plants that don't overwinter and tie up the garden.
Yeah.
So for the next season, you don't have to do double work.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability, our weekly gardens expert. Tell us more about how people can find out about Embark.
So Embark is a nonprofit organization, and you can visit us in our headquarters here in the Student Union Building, first floor, or you can visit our website at embarksustainability.org or through our social channels at Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Let's take a look at the weather now. Looking like a pretty good week here in the Vancouver area, with pretty much the whole week calling for a mix of sun and cloud, with highs ranging across the week from 20 to 22 degrees, all pretty civilized. We are looking like we might get some rain Tuesday evening, but other than that, it's pretty good. Lucky if you're camping this week, and generally a nice July day. Peter's going to be up in about 5 minutes.
Yes, I will be.
Talking about the
World Water Advisories across Canada.
Yep. and on Indigenous reserves and communities across Canada. But first, we're going to take a look back at the North Burnaby Record Roundup.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On June 20th, the Lockdale Community Hall next to Burnaby Mountain was home to the North Burnaby Vinyl Record Roundup. The event was organized by Jonathan Laird, owner of the currently on hiatus Burnaby record store, Hooked on Phono. The Vinyl Record Roundup is a community event where record store owners and music collectors alike gather to sell from their own personal collections. Each table was covered inch to inch with vinyl records, CDs, cassette tapes, and other rare pieces of music memorabilia. Admittedly, it was a bit of a dizzying experience. Once we had finally taken a look at everything, though, we spoke with the event's organizer, Jonathan Laird, about why he put together this vinyl record roundup in the first place.
It's a good opportunity to get into some people's collections that are avid collectors that might have oversized collections. So they bring stuff that stores might not have. There's a lot of highly curated collections here that you can leaf through and find some good deals. There's also people that are downsizing families' collections, that kind of thing. And there's also other shops that like to get out into the community. Today we've got Matterhorn Records, we've got Relove Records from New West, Matterhorn from Vancouver.
Afterwards, we walked around and chatted with a few other vendors at the Record Roundup, from store owners to people who just really love music. Take a listen.
Hey, I'm Johnny Matter from Matterhorn Records.
All right, and what brings you here today?
We're here at the North Burnaby Record Show because John's a wicked guy and he puts on a good show. There's way more selection, for one. You never know what you're going to find. You can find that holy grail you've been looking for. You might not find it at a record show, at a record store. And there's way more vendors, so there's way more... I guess different genres of music and stuff.
Sure. Jack Tielman, T-I-E-L-E-M-A-N, Nanaimo, British Columbia, Canada.
All right, what brings you here from Nanaimo?
It's a great place to sell records. It's a good environment, and it's nothing funner than slinging sides.
Yeah, and you know, what got you into collecting and also just selling like this? Like, what's the significance of it for you?
As I like to say, with any good addiction, you become a user, then a dealer. So I've just loved records since I was a kid, and then it turned a passion into like a business, and now it's more of a hobby, but it's one of the best things you can do. You have friends around the world because of records. Well, you see records you never see, because there's people that only sell at these events. You get people that are gung-ho, that know a lot about music and really are keen. So you get the high-end collectors, people that are very excited to find rare records or hard-to-find records.
Yep, my name's Jessica Brown, and I'm the co-owner of Relove Records in downtown New West.
All right, and yeah, as a record store, what's the importance of coming out to events like this and selling as well?
Getting people to know who you are. We're a little bit of a hidden gem in the New West area, and we just like to remind people that we're around and we got some really great albums. You know, it's really good to see, and it's good to be a part of this environment. When they're doing well, we're doing well. So it's one of these things where we all kind of see each other's successes too. And I like to see that. There's some great albums here. They were meant to be played and replayed. It's fun. Fun gig.
To learn of when and where the next Vinyl Record Roundup is happening, you can follow the Instagram page North Burnaby Vinyl Record Roundup. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
And we got lots more good programming coming up here on CJSF today, starting at about, we have Democracy Now! Coming up at 11 o'clock in about just over 10 minutes. And later in the day at 3 o'clock is Typically Tuesdays with Leslie Wang. That also airs again tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. And tomorrow on Speak Up, starting at 10 a.m., host Danny Nesvadarani is going to be talking about his recent trip to New York State, including what he learned during his time at a community radio station, Wave Farm Radio, in Hudson, New York. And later in the hour, I'll be discussing some upcoming local art exhibitions and what you can find at those around our community. So tune in tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. for Speak Up with Danny. So, Peter, you're going to be talking about the ongoing water crisis at Indigenous communities right. around Canada.
I'm looking at a map from the Counts of Canadians, and it seems like we don't have any of this in British Columbia. Have you heard of it being in British Columbia? Because they have a map here, and they have the areas. They have Quebec, Ontario, none in Alberta, according to this map, but Saskatchewan, Manitoba. I just looked at it now. I didn't think to. Have you heard that there's any in British Columbia? What's this?
I haven't heard any. I mean, if I was to think about why, it's probably just the nature of the rivers and stuff here in BC. You know, okay. Lots of mountain rivers, lots of water. I think it's much more of an issue when you're relying on well water and that kind of thing. Anyway.
So anyway, but the show on last Wednesday, the for the United States show from 9 to 9:30, East Orksa, a county or whatever, yeah. Their problem was the groundwater. It was nitrate contamination to the groundwater. But I think in Canada,
which I believe typically comes from. Agricultural runoff, because nitrates are like...
Oh, that's right. I'm remembering it now.
Yeah. Agricultural runoff.
I'm remembering
from fertilizers and stuff.
That's what caused it. Anyway, but what it seems to be in Canada is the bad infrastructure. Mm-hmm. That's the infrastructure seems to be at fault. Now, in 2015, this was the Justin Trudeau coming in for the first time. Pledge $2 billion to build and upgrade water systems on reservations. And what has happened...
When was that pledge made?
2015.
Okay.
And part of the problem that happens is that... what the bureaucracy is, there is like the federal, provincial, municipal... Mm-hmm. So they say, they start pointing the fingers. Well, we don't have this guy. We don't have that guy. We don't have this guy. Now, the other thing is that they have to go through the Indigenous Service Canada. Mm-hmm. And they have to have a study done. And that has to be approved. Now, what happened at one reservation... in Ontario for a water treatment plant built 1993. 1995, it had to be upgraded. And then in 2015, there were still problems, and they had 2017, 2018, 2019 upgrades, but still it wasn't solved. Part of the problem is supposedly fraud and basically incomplete work. And also, what always happens is they always take the lowest bid, mm-hmm. even though the Aboriginal community may say, you know what, we don't want the lowest bid because there's kind of problems with always the lowest bid. We would prefer something else. And, it seems that that's sort of what the problems are because... there was one that it was... They had this one place. It was $231 million was done for it, and it still didn't work, or they didn't get the money, and so on. So, I mean, this is why I think Canada should not have a military. Let's just spend the money on this, for example. And it just keeps going on forever.
It does seem a bit shameful that we're 11 years later on this commitment, and I mean, they have made some progress in some communities, but you would think after, you know, do you have in your notes there how many communities they were at the beginning? I remember it was like a number under, pretty high, but under 200. So it's not like a completely unmanageable size project.
18% of First Nations communities in Canada are under a boiled water advisory. 18%.
Yeah.
And it seems kind of stayed at that level and all this time. And then there was, of course, the Stephen Harper years. I think Stephen Harper promised a few things. But the thing was, I think it's even more shameful with Justin Trudeau, because it's like, I'm more progressive than Stephen Harper. I'm just so wonderful. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's not good for his legacy at all.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of things. You remember, there are a lot at the beginning of the Trudeau administration.
Justin
Trudeau
for
administration.
For us older people, remember the father.
You know, they made a lot of commitments and promises about a lot of things. You know, and some things related to reconciliation, you know, are understandably challenging, because, you know, it's not, you know, you know, part of the process of reconciliation is working out differences and issues between communities, and you can't just go with one, you know, one size fits all, or we're going to do this because every community is different. Every, you know, the communities, those communities are interacting with are different. All this kind of stuff. Reconciliation can be really difficult, but it seems to me that this problem is much more of a sort of technical / engineering problem, and they should have just been able to go, we're going to make this happen. We're going to put in the resources, which is not just money, but resources, and make sure the expertise is available to deal with this problem. You know, I think a problem a lot of communities have is that they're very small communities, and it's really not, for a lot of small communities, you can't have, and I mean this of any kind of small community, not just an Indigenous community, it's hard to have all the different kinds of expertise you need, whether it's water and everything else that goes with, you know, all the different community needs. But it should have been a problem that could have been solved. It's like, okay, here's the project, here's what we're going to do, we're going to do these things and make it happen. And it's, you know, it's surprising and as we said, a little shameful that it hasn't happened yet. I kind of feel like perhaps they should create like a Indigenous-led NGO at a national level to lead this project, where you can get all the expertise to do it, and you're not relying on individual communities that might be overstrapped, that don't have the expertise to execute because they're too small. You know, you can't have, you know, in small communities, you can't have experts in all these different things reliably. And you know, I think, you know, if it's, you know, an Indigenous-led organization would probably be much more motivated than just ordinary Indigenous affairs bureaucrats to actually make this happen. You know, they're much more responsible to their own communities, and it just seems to me would be a great model to attack this problem, and also give, you know, you'd also give great lots of good job opportunities for Indigenous graduates in these areas where the expertise is needed.
So what do you think was part of Justin Trudeau's thinking, that it just, I mean, he could have said more in 10 years, 11, almost 10 years, or a bit over 10 years of him being prime minister. What do you think was his thinking process in this?
I would say that probably the biggest problem, probably just never got enough attention from the government and the cabinet. You know, I mean, they made the promise, they committed some money, but, you know, as a government, you have tons of different things going on, and some things get more attention than others. And probably a big part of the problem was this didn't get enough attention and political capital put into it to make it actually happen. But it's complicated. I'm not an expert on the specifics of the issue, but I suspect it just didn't get enough. You know, there were, you know, it's easy to make promises at the beginning. It's difficult to execute successfully in all the issues you have before you as you're in government, and some governments are better at that than that, and I think inevitably some issues fall by the wayside and don't get done well. Every government suffers from that.
Mark Carney hasn't really mentioned anything about this that I heard of.
No.
So are we about ready for Amy Goodman to say for 15 years she's been on this station?
Even though it's been almost 25. But yes, Democracy Now! Is coming up in about 10 seconds. And stay tuned for Wandering Rhythms with Nick Legacy up at 12 noon. Typically Tuesday at 3, and lots more coming up this evening. Here's Democracy Now!